We've been talking through these things of meetings, and I've talked about them, not the gradual seeping of God into us, but those handful of moments in our lives when suddenly it's like a vertical striking. We meet with it and it has a crisis, life-changing moment for our lives. So another of these meetings is described here in Mark's Gospel and chapter 5. So they came to the other side of the lake, into the country of the Gerasenes. As he stepped ashore, a man possessed by an unclean spirit came up to him from among the tombs where he was dwelling. He could no longer be controlled. Even chains were useless. He'd often been fettered and chained up. But he had snapped the chains and broken the fetters. No one was strong enough to master him. And so unceasingly, night and day, he would cry out aloud among the tombs, on the hillsides, and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus in the distance, he ran and flung himself down before him, shouting loudly, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High? In God's name, do not torment me." For Jesus was already saying to him, "Out, unclean spirit, come out of this man." Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he said, "for there are so many of us." And he begged hard that Jesus would not send them out of the country. Now there happened to be a large herd of pigs feeding on the hillside, and the spirits begged him, "Send us among the pigs and let us go into them." He gave them leave. And the unclean spirits came out and went into the pigs, and the herd of about 2,000 rushed over the edge of the lake and were drowned. The men in charge of them took to their heels and carried the news to the town and the countryside, and the people came out to see what had happened. They came to Jesus and saw the madman who had been possessed by the legion of devils sitting there clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. The spectators told them how the madman had been cured and what had happened to the pigs. They then begged Jesus to leave the district. As he was stepping into the boat, the man who had been possessed begged to go with him. Jesus would not allow it, but he said to him, "Go home to your own folk and tell them what the Lord in his mercy has done for you." The man went off and spread the news in the 10 towns of all that Jesus had done for him, and they were all amazed. A boat lands on the shore, and a mentally ill man or a demon-possessed individual finds that his path has met and crossed with that of Jesus. "Wait," you say, "I'm not demon-possessed, nor am I mentally ill." Aren't you? Are we not all mentally ill? The degree of illness may not be so great, or the amount of time we suffer it so long, that we're classified under the title mentally ill, as opposed to our not-so-ill moments when we get away with it under the tab normal. We seem to have abandoned the idea of a person being plagued by a legion of demons in favor of hereditary and environmental causes, bad parents, unfortunate beginnings, etc. We see this now as the cause for mental illness. We perhaps need both perspectives, because there's a sense in which the sufferer of illness cannot grow back to and beyond normality. And when that begins to happen, that incapacity to do it, it appears as if they're enslaved, as if they're possessed. They haven't regenerative power of their own to escape from it. They appear incapable of seeing the issue that binds them in their pain and cannot break through it to freedom. The individual in the gospel story, which we've just read, was in this position. In his book, Theories of Life and Education, John Lancaster Spaulding says, "Many are sick because they've not the heart to be well. Nevertheless, we are all mentally ill because we are all spiritually ill, unwhole." Psychiatrists identify two kinds of disorder which relate to personal responsibility, not having, as Spaulding put it, the heart or desire to be well. All these turn around whether or not we can take on board responsibility and our attitude to it. There is the neurotic on the one hand and the person with a character disorder on the other. They correspond really to the beams of the cross, the one going down and the one going across. The neurotic claims the upright part of the cross, the I. I'm to blame for everything. The character disordered person goes for the cross beam. Now, it's not me, it's everybody else who's to blame. A woman, let's call her Jean, has a husband who's a womanizer, who's had several affairs. But Jean blames herself for not being attractive enough in looks or personality to prevent her husband doing this. She isn't greatly house proud and would have liked to be out working in the community. Instead, her husband attacked and criticized her for not being a home bird. She says, "I'm to blame. I must be frigid. I ought to be a better housekeeper." This is the neurotic approach to responsibility. Now, of course, we've got to examine ourselves and we've got to be aware of our faults. This is the basis, after all, for the scriptural discipline of confession. But they must be real faults, not neurotic ones. Jean had a problem, all right. It was her husband. Until she realizes this, she will not have the heart or desire to be well. Crossing the path of Christ, meeting with him, can mean she will no longer be enslaved in this way. Now divorced and remarried to a faithful husband and undertaking a career as a successful teacher, she is affirmed and she is free. We have to discern what we are not responsible for. We have to stop gashing ourselves with stones. Like the man in the Gerasenes, this can happen when we cross paths with Christ, when we meet with him. But at the other end of the spectrum is another illness, the cross member. I'm not to blame, it's everybody else. Once I had the following conversation with an alcoholic. It went like this: "You're drinking." Answer: "A little." Question: "Well, why?" "I'm bored." "Well, why not get a job then?" "Well, I've got kids to look after." "But if you're drunk, you can't look after them. Why not get help from your mother? She could look after them while you went out to work. She's ill. It'll be too much for her." "Yeah, but you've got a good income from your husband. Get a childminder." "I don't want other people poking about in my house." And so it goes on. It's everyone else's fault or responsibility but mine. And I'm going to evade really tackling the question that goes to the heart of my situation. My four children, I'm pleased about this. It's beginning as they've, have I got grandchildren now? It's beginning to happen to them as they inflicted it upon me. What goes round comes round, doesn't it? The children were always nabbing food from the blooming pantry in our last vicarage. So I locked the pantry up with a padlock on it. One day, stupidly, I left it open. And the food we got in had gone. I questioned, I interrogated all four of them. It turned out it wasn't one of them, it was a fifth person called Nobody. If I get my hands on that bloke Nobody, I'm going to strangle him to death. No one came forward to accept responsibility. But on the other hand, a child loved by her parents will see herself as deficient and unlovable rather than see her parents as at fault in their lack of capacity to love. to admit responsibility in place of Mr. Nobody, or to see one's parents at fault and yourself not responsible, is a very painful exercise. It means crossing paths with Jesus, and it means enduring the pain of crucifixion. Either crucifying all my lies and excuses and taking responsibility, or crucifying our rose-coloured spectacle image of others and acknowledging the responsibility is theirs and not mine. If we can manage to submit to this pain, then like the man at the Gerasenes, we will sit peacefully in our own and right mind. This is the great issue of human existence, distinguishing between what we are and what we are not responsible for. Crossing paths with Jesus gives us the opportunity to do this. However, it still remains true that many are sick because they don't have the heart to be well.